deliciousness.
Grim
and wonderful. Newness at the Shabbos. Richie, today you don't show up on time. I'm talking to him on the way.
Shabbos waits for no man.
Because the web designer had a great idea yesterday to keep people involved on the site. Have an actual picture of the Daf Yomi. And you can, when you enter the site, you become part of the shiur. So one of the things you can do is click on something, which is Wake Up Richie.
That's a great idea.
Yes, what we wanted to do was have Richie say over the entire blot every day on an MP3, so that at the point where you wake him up, it says over the last word. Wouldn't that be great? That way we get him to say every day. So, it does divrei b'chusa, which we'll have to play back to Richie. Let us begin the Masechta Shabbos. So, the Tosfos understands that the structure of the Masechta is basically built around the order of time. He says this is where we have this often. When Sochem, for instance, we talk about the earliest things, the night before, the Bedika or La Arba'asar, go on to the dinim of the burning of the chametz and so on. We get to the bringing of the korban, and finally we get to the Seder. So the Rivaz suggests that that's the case here as well. We start, basically the Masechta starting on Erev Shabbos, talking about, forget about the first Mishnah, but it talks about getting your haircuts before Erev Shabbos, checking your pockets before Erev Shabbos, and then it gets to lighting the candles, making sure that your stove is set up in Kira. And finally, we get to the Malachas of Shabbos and so on and so forth. And the only thing is that this part is a little introduction, because otherwise you wouldn't know what checking your pockets is all about and what not to go out with wearing. The guys, the carpenter's not supposed to go wearing a pencil behind his ears. So we introduce it. Why don't we introduce the other elements of the malachas that we also don't know? And if we're going to talk about setting up your oven, why don't we talk about bishul and so on? And those malachas are obvious malachas. But hotzah is such a strange idea. It's called a malacha gru'a because it doesn't have any impact on an object. It's the only malacha in which an object remains unchanged, and the only issue is the relationship of an object to space, which is a very strange way to look at malacha. Because the Tana felt that it's necessary to give us some background in order to be able to appreciate that, so therefore Hotzah was mentioned. Now, I think Bezrat Hashem, when we get to the end of the Masechta and we have our Siyam, we can find other patterns about this that I think you'll find more satisfying. But this is this will wait, because you have to see the whole Masechta first to see that structure. But it's a nice approach, and it's basically what I told you. What right now is a tzira of the Rivan or Rabbeinu Tam, but it's the way that Tosfos essentially ends up looking at. Zakt.
Shabbos.
Seder Mayim. That's right. Long time the Halik is Seder Mayim. You might as well do this right, Sabbat Josh. It's only once in a while we get a chance to do that.
Said,
the poor man. All right. Ki'ilu hayat ma'aseh. Yitzia is ha-shabar shtayim shein arba. B'fnim shtayim shein arba b'chutz. Before we begin the details, let's just have a very basic introduction to the idea of Hotzah. The Torah says, Al-Yetzei Ish Mimikomo B'Yom HaShabbat, from which we darshan Al-Yetzei doesn't mean just to walk out, but rather Al-Yotzi. You shouldn't go out carrying something to collect the man, which would have been the norm to collect the man, and which shows us that you can't carry something from one rishus to another. Now, L'maisa, the only raya that the Gemara brings, as we'll see later, actually, this too is a machlokas rishonim, but let's assume, the way Tosfos at least understands it today, so yeah, is that the only real av malacha that's mentioned b'feirush is taking out into Rosh Hashanah. So that you're walking out of your house and you're doing a hotza'ah in the literal sense, going outside, yotzei. When we say today, ani yotzei letzeit, I'm going to go out for a tiyul and so on, you're going outside. Same thing is true if you're bringing something to the Mishkan, which is a public area, so you're going outside, so to speak, from your own personal rishus to rishus rabbim. We'll see that those rishuyot are not defined really by the usage, the way they are by Tumah, rishut ha'yachid and rishut ha'rabbim, but rather by specific spatial definitions. And that's unique to Shabbos.
Is it related to the Mishkan?
Yes, very much so. Because essentially the idea over there was, we'll see the Gemara brings various psukim and examples of things that were in the Mishkan, including even later on carrying on the agalot, raising the krashim from the Mishkan to the agalot, and so on, which we learn about other issues of passing from one Rishut HaYafi to another Rishut HaYafi as they passed over the agalot. But the Pashtut, the problem was, in terms of the Avodat HaMishkan, bringing the donations to the Mishkan, and so there too you were being machnes, you were being motzi to the Rishus, the open area where the Mishkan was. Now, there are three components, really, to every Hotza'ah, because the change of the object's position is only viewed as being really changed if the object was at rest in a particular space, and comes to rest in a particular space. But an object that is not at rest is not shayech to hotza'ah. Later on we'll have questions about relative space. Suppose we have one space which is within another space, and that space is moving. Let's say it's a boat. Now that space, the object is at rest relative to the boat, but the boat is not at rest relative to the earth, or relative to the pond that it's in, and so on. All those types of discussions will come later, but what is important is that we need to have a concept of at rest. The definition of at rest is technical, which we'll see comes from an analysis of this Mishnah. And the Mishnah is assuming that when an object is in someone's hands who is at rest, that object is at rest in the space that he's in. As a matter of fact, Tosafot suggests one of the main reasons why the Mishnah is brought here is to be medayek all of these various halachas agave hotza. Now, that means that in order to be accomplished, the malach of hotza'ah, you need to uproot an object from where it was at rest. And uproot is literally called akira. Just like if you would uproot a plant, it would be oker. You need to be oker of the papers that you're moving from one rishus to another. If you just carry something from one rishus to another, you did not do hotza'ah. Because part of the hotza'ah is the uprooting it from where it was, and the putting it back down in the rishus where it's being brought to. So if somebody, let's say you were walking along and somebody handed you something, and then somebody, yeah, you moved to another rishus, and somebody took it out of your hand when you got to the other rishus, you did not do a hotza'ah, despite the fact that you moved from one rishus to the other. All you did was the movement, and the movement itself is not the act of the hotza'ah. Therefore, the way to understand the Mishnah is that the Mishnah looks at a number of different issues. It looks at a hotza'ah that's accomplished completely by one individual who does an akira, walking, meaning you're chain, when I say walk, meaning you're changing from one rishus to another, and then a setting down. So you have akira, hotza'ah, and hanocha. The Mishnah also considers the person who just does the akira and the hotza'ah and doesn't do the hanocha. It also considers a case where a person just does the hotza'ah and doesn't do the akira. We'll see, as we get along in the sugya, which ones the Mishnah is looking at carefully and considers them to be worthy of mention, and which ones are not. And that's because there's three different dargot. There's, in Shabbat, you have chayav, which means that you would be chayav karet if you don't have the hatra'ah and so on, but you would be chayav karet. B'mezid, you'd be chayav skila if you actually did it with a hatra'ah. You'd be chayav korban chatat if you did it b'shovit. That's chayav. You also have patur. Patur means where it's asur min rabbanan, and you're not allowed to do it. You also have mutar. Mutar means they never asur'd that particular at all. Now, in our Mishnah, we'll have elements of hotza'ah that are chayav, elements of hotza'ah that are patur, and elements of hotza'ah that later on the Gemara is going to say is mutar totally, and therefore the Mishnah doesn't bother enumerating them, even though it mentions the cases in which they're included, but they're not mentioned by number. So what we number involves us only in the chayev and some of the potter. We'll see that there's even two levels of potter that we're going to be careful about in our Mishnah, because there can be a potter where the Rabbana didn't want you to be involved in a hotza'ah. For instance, somebody gives you something to set down, in which case you didn't do the akira, but you did the hanacha and the hotza'ah. You're not supposed to be part of a malacha, but there's no possible way you could ever have been chayav in that hotza'ah because you didn't do the akira. On the other hand, if you did the akira and let somebody else do the hanacha, that's more chamor, because you might have actually come to get you. Suppose you decided to do the hanacha yourself. So there's really four shadings in the Mishnah, and that accounts for the way in which we enumerate the things in the Mishnah, which is somewhat arbitrary, because we could have counted it in many different ways, as the Gemara is going to point out. We can count it by only the chiyuvim and have four. We could count it by the chiyuvim and the pturim and have 12. We've counted by the chiyuvim and the pturim and even the things that are mutter, in which case we'd have 16 examples in the Mishnah. Or, the way we do it, is we count the chiyuvim and the pturim that are of the upper shading, the kind that you do the akira and could have probably de chiyuv. Because this is the way Rashi understands it. We'll see there's other approaches as well. But I don't want to get too confused right out at the onset. So there's two words that are used for Yitziyot HaShabbat in the technical terms. One, the general term is Hotza'ah. And Hotza'ah can be done from one rishus to another, no matter how we define that rishus. Right now, for the sake of simplicity, the Gemara is assuming, the Mishnah is assuming there's two rishiyot. There's Rishut Rabim, Rishut HaYachid. We'll see that things are more complicated than that. And there are various non-rishiyot. There's such a thing as non-space, which is called a Makom Patur. And there's such a thing as a Drabbanan Rishut, which is a Karmelit, which would give you special Isurim, that we make it similar to a Rishut HaYachid, even though it really isn't, Mi'ikra Adin. And, but right now we're only going to talk about Rishut Rabim Rishut HaYachid. So in terms of Rishut Rabim Rishut HaYachid, you can have Hotza'ot, which include two subcategories, taking from Rishut HaYachid into Rishut Rabim, which is the one that, according to Tosfos, is the only one mentioned in the Torah, and that's the Hotza'ah. Then you can have going from Rishut Rabim into Rishut HaYachid, which is, according to Tosfos, a Tolda, and many Rishonim hold it's not a Tolda, and that the Gemara, the way we have it, is making assumptions or using words in different ways that end up not standing at the end. But there's a different type of Hotza'ah, which is called Haknasah, which is simply going from a Rishut HaRabim into Rishut HaYachid. In order to make things simple, instead of explaining each time Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim, we use a shorthand in this Mishnah, which has other Kabbalistic implications, but the shorthand is that a Rishut HaYachid is here called the Balabayit. In other words, he's in his home. The Rishut HaRabim is referred to as the Ani, because the poor man is coming from the Rishut HaRabim, knocking on the door of the Balabayit, and that's simply for nomenclature, it makes things a lot easier than saying each time, Echad Aymei Birshut HaRabim, Echad Aymei Birshut HaYachid. So we just talk about an Ani and an Asher. With all of that, we can now easily understand our very simple Mishnah, which points out that Yitziyot HaShabbat, if we include under the idea of Yitziyot Hotza'ot, which includes both Yitziyah and Hachnasa, going in or out or in, actually, respectively, are Shtayim, Shehin Arba Bifnim. Now we're going to do this first the way Rashi learns it. Tomorrow I'll expand on it, but I think you need a little time for the ideas to settle in. So let's do it like Rashi. Shtayim Shehin Arba. As a matter of fact, when I say like Rashi, I mean like Rashi here, not like Rashi elsewhere, because Rashi elsewhere has other ways of constructing a Mishnah. But Shtayim Shehin Arba Bifnim, meaning there's two ways that you can do Yitziyah if you are indoors. Bifnim meaning here indoors. The Shtayim Shein Arba Bachutz, and there's two ways that you can do a Hotza'ah. Again, referring either to Achnasa or to Yitziyah. If you're standing outdoors, which if we include the Surei Rabbanan, which you're not supposed to do, actually becomes four. as well. And what are they? Kesed, when we say this, what do we mean? Well, an ani, now an ani by definition is omed b'chutz in Rishut HaRabbi. The balabayit, again, we're defining it as a man who is omed b'fnim. Okay, given now those definitions, here are the cases. Pashata aniyat yado lifnim. V'natan letoch yado shel balabayit. Suppose the ani is holding something. In this case, it's the receipt. He assuredly wrote this receipt before Shabbat. Or it's the hagralah, you know. So he hands it from outside into the hand of the rishut of the, into the hand who's standing in his rishut of the Baal HaBayit. So now what has he done? He has been machnis, which is strange because it starts off with Yitziyot HaShabbat and it actually defines somebody who puts something inside, which the Gemara will comment on. Oh, shindatal mitocha v'hotzi. Or he takes something out of the hand of the Baal HaBayit, which is surely not money in this case, probably some challahs for Shabbos, and takes it outside into the Rishut HaRabim, he'ani chayav uba'al habayit patur. So in this case, the ani would be chayav. The Baal HaBayit did nothing. He basically just sat there and was a shelf. So the ani took from his hand, put into his hand. This has nothing to do with the Baal HaBayit. But the ani in this case is actually chayav because he was machnis or motzi.
Of the two that become four.
We haven't got. We've only gotten the two. Here is the two bachutz. According to Rashi, shlaim bachutz meaning somebody standing bachutz.
And the two that are four. This is. A subsection of the one and leading to the other case, or is it?
No, these are the two that you're chayev b'chutz.
Okay.
When we say two, we mean one is a yitziyah and one is a hachnasa. But the person who's doing it is standing b'chutz.
Okay.
Now, you'll note, and it's important to sense this, you'll note that according to this, it's important for us to differentiate between an act of yitziyah when it's done as bringing something towards you, or an act of yitziyah when it's done as pushing something away from you. Because in this case, we have only the transference of an object without the movement of your body. That's what why we're able to split this up to into a bachutz and a bifnim. Normally, if a person were carrying in the typical way, it would be unimportant to us to split it up in this fashion. Correct? Because you do a yitziyah and a hachnas in exactly the same way. What would be the point of whether you're poor or rich? The only point of being an ani or a Baal HaBayit is because you aren't moving. So what we need to do, what we're talking about over here is a little, think about this for a moment. If we normally take for granted that when a person is at rest where he is, that the object is considered to be at rest on the person. In which case, the movement of the person, he has something in his pocket. He gets up from the couch, opens the door, walks out and sits down on a bench. Now, we would understand that that person did an act of Akira, Hotsah, and Hanocha. That's not what happens in this case. And you think to yourself, well, now, wait a second. The object remained in my hand in exactly the same place it always was from beginning to the end. I had my hand in the other Rishas. Take up an object, when I lift an object and put it to my hand, in that other rishus, without having changed my body, did I bring it into my rishus? Where is it? Is it now at rest when my hand is in the other rishus? I now move it into this rishus? It's still relative to my hand, exactly the same way it always was. So you'd think that you're going to have to make a choice. Either your hand is an extension of your body, in which case, at the moment that you lifted it, it was in another rishus. And then you don't need to bring it in at all. Or you're going to say the hand is not attached to the body, in which case the example would be putting it down somewhere, which I never do. So it's important for me to have this case because it raises all types of strange issues about the relationship of my act and my hand to the object. If it wouldn't be for the fact that I'm standing in one place, extending my hand in, the Mishnah really wouldn't make any sense. How can we have different cases depending on where you happen to be. That's absurd. Who cares if you start off b'chutz, you start off b'fnitz, all right? But here we're dealing with a type of hotzah in which only the object is moving. I'm accomplishing the hotzah with achmas in two totally different ways. One by bringing something to me and one by extending something away from me. You can certainly understand that the way that a malacha is done is significantly impacted by that kind of thing. For instance, if I were carrying something behind me and I left it over on my back, and I walked out with it, or I'm carrying that same thing in front of me, makes a tremendous difference to the malacha. Many items that I'll carry behind me, I won't be chayav on, because it's not the derech of Otsarv. It wasn't properly munach when it was standing, when it was across my back on a stick and so on. Each case has to be defined. It's certainly an important nekuda to get these differentiations. And we'll see, we're going to make the yukim about them in the Gemara. So we have now, according to Rashi, first, the description of somebody who is omed b'chutz. He's an ani. He did a hotzah by taking out of the hand of the asher, who's ani b'fim, and taking it to himself. Or he did a hachnasa by taking his own hand, extending it inside, and dropping it into somebody else's hand. The other two are to one who is b'fim. Bifni means he's the balabayit. Okay, the balabayit extends the bread, extends his hand holding the bread to the yoni bachutz and deposits the bread in the hand of the yoni. Or he takes the receipt from the hand of the yoni and brings it in to him. In this case, the baal habayit is chayav and the yoni is patur. Again, the yoni really didn't do anything. All he did was he just sat there. And we'll see that this is really an inaccurate use of the word patur, because it's really mutar. He's uninvolved. Does no action whatsoever. These are shtayim bifnim and shtayim b'chutz. Now, we said that the shtayim shein arba bifnim.
Right.
How did that happen? Getting back to the one who's omed b'chutz, let's see how he can have another two cases that are worth mentioning. Pashata ani et yado lifnim. By the way, you'll notice that in the cases that we just had, we actually discussed four for each. Because we shouldn't need to consider the fact that the balabayit in the first cases served as a deposit area for a hanocha and served as a removal object for an akira. So actually, the omeid b'fnim should have two additional cases in the first case for the omeid b'chutz. And the Omei Bachutz, who serves as the repository for the Hanok of the Balabayit, or the placement of the Akira for the Balabayit, that's the Oni, has two additional cases in the second section, where the Balabayit does. We're obviously ignoring that. We don't think we have Shnayim Shein Arba. Even though in these first cases, each one is Shnayim Shein Arba, right? You see that?
Only the past.
We're falling asleep. That's why you don't see it. If the person, you have one person who's active,
right,
and one person who's totally passive.
Right.
That person who's passive, in the case of the Oni, Omei Bachutz, the one who's passive is the one who's Bifnim, is the Balabayit.
Right.
In the Balabayit's being active case, the Oni, who is Bachutz, is the passive.
Okay.
But each one of the cases actually includes two passive examples of its alternate.
The mirror
image, right? So the Oni, we talked about two chayiv cases of the Oni, two chayiv cases of the Balabayit, but those two chayiv cases included two passive cases of the other one. Now clearly the Mishnah did not include the number of them. That's four additional cases that the Mishnah is ignoring, because we start off with Shnayim Shein Arba. The Gemara says the reason we ignore those cases is specifically because they're totally passive. You can't include a case in which I'm a shelf, basically. For all intents and purposes, I'm uninvolved, fast asleep. And you could say the same thing.
Why do you need a mirror image?
You don't. You don't need a mirror image. Because we're going to get to a case where the mirror wakes up. And that's now the two cases that are coming that we're going to add to each. So now, how do we get those two cases where the mirror wakes up and becomes active instead of passive? The case is this. Suppose now Pashat Ani et Yado, getting back to that Ani Yuzome Bachutz. Again, he's the Bachutz. Here's the two additional cases for the Bachutz, according to Rashi. Pashat Ani et Yado Lifnim. How about if the Ani sticks his hand with the receipt into the doorway, the Baal Habayit now removes the receipt from the hand of the Ani. The Baal Habayit in this case is active, and he has now taken part in the closure of this hotza'ah by doing the hanacha, because the Ani never does a hanacha. In other words, it's clear that when his hand is extended into the Rishut HaYachid through the door, the hotza'ah has not yet been completed because he hasn't deposited it. He did akira. The Ani did akira, but does no hanacha, which means that when his hand is at rest in the house, apparently the object is not at rest in the house. It's in some type of limbo because it's in the hand of the Ani, which seems to be attached to the Ani outside of the house. Therefore, he needs to deposit it in the hand of the Baal HaBayit. But in this case, he did not deposit it in the hand of the Baal HaBayit. The Baal HaBayit takes it, thereby becoming a partner in crime. Except that he didn't do the Akira, so he can't be chayev for this partner. He's a partner in crime, but he's not chayev. The Ani, because he has a partner, is also not chayev.
The object started off inside. No.
Outside with the Ani. It was the receipt. So the Ani began to do the Hotzah by doing the Akira. That is another one chalked up for the Ani. He was about to do a Hachnasa. He did the Akira. He transferred the item. He didn't put it down. He never completed it. Who did complete the crime? The Baal HaBayit. But this is yet another case in which we will not include the number for the Baal HaBayit. Reason, even though what he did was wrong, even though he's not passive, the reason is he never could have been chayev in this case anyway, because someone else started and there'd be no way for him to have come to a chiyuv. So even though he's active, it's not going to count towards his case. Right? It's not going to be two, one out of the two missing ones for the mirror, namely the Baal HaBayit.
And when he's putting his hand into the shusei.
Bad boy. Bad boy. That's included. With the object.
Yeah, and even though he may have stopped, it's not called...
He stopped. He didn't do hanacha. He was a bad boy, because if he had done that hanacha, he would have been chayav. So we're going to count this case against the Ani. This is case number three for the Ani. It's only Durabana, though, because we can't be chayav. He didn't complete the melacha d'oraita.
And even standing still,
which is our problem. I mean, it's a mamanashach. So if is something in your hand at rest in the space in which it is, then if that's the case, why isn't he chayav as soon as he puts his hand in? Is something in your hand not at at rest where it is, then why, if it was in his hand previously, does he suddenly become chayav when he extends it outwards? There's obviously some additional factor, which clearly is going to be the relationship of his hand to his body in that space, which the Gemara will be medayik afterwards. It's just another confusing issue of the Mishnah. So we now have three cases for a man who's standing bechutz, two of which is chayav, one of which is potter, but could have led him lidei chiyuv had he completed it, and therefore we're going to list it as bad, bad, bad.
And as number three.
And four. That's number three. Now where's
four.
Now we're about to have number four. What else did he do? Oh, what else he did is that he was natan letocha. In this case, the Baal HaBayit put something into the open hand of the Ani. Now the Ani then removes that thing, v'hotzi, and he takes it out of the Rishus to himself, standing in Rishut Rabin. Now, he only completed the action in that case, and the Baal HaBayit was the one who began the action. Both of them are bad, bad boys because they were partners in crime, but we list this case, this is what is strange about Rashi's enumeration, we list this case as being the case of the Chiyuv of the Akira, it will turn out in the Gemara, of the Baal HaBayit, because we're only listing the ones that can be Ativi Dechiyud. At this point in the Mishnah, we don't need to look at it that way. Right?
Because the other one's active.
Because what we can look at is the guy who is doing the action of the movement of the chafetz is the one that we're listing. So in both cases, we list the ani. Here, we're talking about the guy who's ani bachutz. He's the one who did the hachnasa, and then someone else did the hanocha. Or he's the one who did the hotzah, and someone else had done the akira. So to keep it consistent with the simple approach in the Mishnah, the way Rashi understands it, there are two cases over here of ptur for an ani. We ignore the balabayit because the balabayit wasn't the one who did the movement from one rishus to another. And in terms of movement, hotzah, we like to look at the movement of the chayfetz as being the important issue, and so we talk about that. All right. The other two are now clear me'alehim. It's the inverse case. In the case where now the balabayit was pashatet yado from inside, he hands out the piece of bread outside, but he doesn't set it down in the hand of the ani. He leaves his hand open. The ani removes the bread from his hand. He now did an akira, a hotzah, with no hanocha. The ani did the hanocha of this particular act of hotzah. And therefore, both of them are patur. In a case where the ani, he had his hand open, balabai, the ani put the receipt in his hand. He now brings his hand back in. So now, he did not do the akira. Again, the natana tocha, the ani puts it into his hand, v'yichnis, shneihem paturim, in this case they would both be patur, and we now would have two acts of hotzah for a guy who is standing outside, one is chayav, one is patur, two acts of yitziyah, of hachnasa, for a guy outside, one is chayav, one is patur, and vice versa. Two acts of hotza'ah for a guy inside, one is chayav and one is pater, and two acts of haknasah for a guy who's inside, one is chayav and one is pater. All right.
So just to recap the shanshan, there's two ways to understand when you say two broad categories and subcategories. It could be, it's four for each one of the two.
Right, there's many different ways we can, there's actually four different ways in the Rishonim to count the shtayim shehin arba.
Okay, because it could be two with each one having two for a total of four, or
correct.
Each one having four, so it's a total
right.
of eight.
The Gemara will go through that. We could have a total of 16, as you're pointing out, that the Gemara is going to ask tomorrow, basically. But right now, we can see how to organize our Mishnah in a simple way, which the Gemara does not accept, as I mentioned to you, because of the shadings of potter, because you can have a potter that can be chayev, ultimately, which would demand that you did the akira. Or you can have a potter which is chashuv because you're moving the chayfetz. Again, from a naive view of the Mishnah seems to be focusing on the movement of the chayfetz, so you've got shtayim, bifnim, bachutz, and everything is very clear. The Gemara will not accept the way I just explained the Mishnah because of this problem. If we don't recognize the shading, then we can't possibly only have two cases of patur for each one. We have four cases of patur. There clearly ought to be 12 cases total mentioned, because if we're including anyone who is active, whether he does the akira or the hanaka, then each one of these people should have had an additional two cases, because they were active either as the ones who were ochre or as the ones who were minyan, each one in the other one's case. Therefore, my simple reading of the Mishnah is really unacceptable. What we're going to have to say is, strangely enough, that since we're only counting the active participant who also could have been chayav had he completed the act, then the active case for the one who was bifnim isn't included in his case of bifnim. Because the active case that we're interested in was when we were talking about the guy who was bachutz and he removed it from the hand of the yoni.
The Akira person. I mean, the people doing akira.
Well, yeah, when he put it into the hand of the ani, that was his case. But that case was listed as a case of the man who's standing outside. But it's the chiyuv of the one who's standing inside.
So
the simple construction of the Mishnah that appears to be focusing on where you're standing in two separate babas for each one. You're standing outside and you do X and Y, or you're standing outside and you do A and B. You're standing inside and you do X and Y. You're standing out, you're standing inside and you do A and B. Okay. That's the way we explain the Mishnah. That's wrong. Because the A and B cases are actually A and B and B for the two cases. The Balabayas Eschiev case appears in the case of the Oni who puts his hand in, and the Balabayas removes it from the hand of the Oni. Right? That case is a Ptur that we don't mention. But the case that we do mention is where the Oni sticks his hand in, the Balabayas puts it into the hand of the Oni. That's not in the Balabayas' case, it's in the Oni's case. The Oni put his hand in, the Balabayas put something into the hand of the Oni. Now the Oni removes it. That's case three for the Balabayas. Even though it appears in the Bava that's discussing the Oni. I'm just pointing out that the structure of the Mishnah on a simple level is unacceptable because it seems to list 12 possibilities or 16. And when we reduce it to 8, we're stuck with recognizing the shading of Akira, according to Rashi, that forces us to insert one of the Chiyuvim of the Balabayit into the Oni's case. One of the Chiyuv of the Oni case is the Balabayas' case. Because we're only going to be talking about the Akira. If we accept that approach of Rashi and the Gemara as well, it's a little awkward just to fit this into the mission. That's all. And tomorrow when we talk about the various options, we'll see other ways of doing it that might keep the Mishnah simple. Okay? Is everybody happy now with this Mishnah? We see all the exciting possibilities.
You mentioned something about the Yad Kagufo or not. Does that make a difference in those two?
Right now, the Mishnah is effectively ignoring that, but it's giving us a lot of food for thought. When we get to it tomorrow, we'll analyze it exactly how it works. Seems to be problems about Yodo Kagufo Domi or not. Okay, so now the Gemara is wondering about the way in which the Mishnah is constructed. I mean, we have an equivalent Mishnah, really, in Mesechet Shavuot, where we mention a number of other things that are Shtayim She'nar. So we say, Shvut Nan Hatam, we learned in Mesechet Shavuot right at the beginning, Shvut Shtayim She'nar. There are actually two Shvuas that are mentioned in the Torah, which is Lahara or Lahativ, which Rafashis means I will eat today, which depending on your weight is Lahara or Lahativ, or I won't eat today. Alright? That actually eating is considered to be a good thing and not eating is considered to be a bad thing, and that's the bottom line, Richie. It's important to remember that. So that's Lahara.
It doesn't compute.
That's Lahara Lahativ. It's in the future. And then we have Shein Arba, we learn out from the Pasuk. He uses the word lakola shayibate. Anything that a person mentions, we learn out that there's also a chiyuv about the past. A man can swear, even though it seems to be a totally different idea, I did eat or I did not eat, which we do not vow, we take an oath. It's a whole different idea, and yet both are included in the concept of Shavuos. So the Shtayim Shein Arba Lahara Olaitiv Ba'atid or B'Sha'avar.
Is it total of 8?
No, 4. Yidiyota Tuma Shtayim Shein Arba. Now we know when it comes to Yidiyota Tuma, we have a strange, very special halacha where the Torah mentions V'ne'elam twice, that teaches us as opposed to other chiyuvim of a carbon, the chiyuv of a carbon B'Shogeg on the Knisa L'Migdash B'Tuma, or Achilat Kodashim Bituma, is only where you first knew and then forgot. You have to have all the information. That means that actually it would be possible to set this up in 4 different ways. You could know that you're Tamei and know that this is the Beit HaMikdash and then forget that you're Tamei. You could know that you're Tamei and know that this is Hegdash meat and then forget that you're Tamei. You could know that you're Tamei and that this is the Beit HaMikdash, and then forget that it's the Beit HaMikdash. You could know that you're Tamei and know that this is Kodesh, and forget that it's Kodesh. Remember that you're Tamei. So there's really 2 essential cases where it's talking about forgetting the Tuma, Unditma, and then the 2 additional cases where it adds an additional Vinelam, Vuhu Tamei, which is he knows the thing that he did wrong. In other words, he knows about the Beis HaMikdash, he knows the food. He just forgot that he was tummy. Marot Negaim, there's only 2 Negaim that are mentioned in the Torah, and that's the Sa'et O Baheret, But since it mentions the word sapachat, and sapachat means as a connotation of secondary to, sifachenina means add me onto the thing. So the sapachat implies that there's also a secondary, eight of the secondary ba'erek, which gives us arba marot nigaim. And furthermore, there's also yitziot ha-shabbat, which is shtayim shehin arba. Now, why is it that it says in Shavuot, ma'ashrahatam betani shtayim shehin arba, and doesn't say that there's eight? Doesn't say shtayim shehin arba bifnim and shtayim shehin arba bachutz? Why is that? And nothing else. Answers the Gemara Hacha, the Iker Shabbatu, Tani Avot, Batani Toladot. Hatam, the Larikar Shabbatu, Avot Tani Toldot Lo Tani. Now, at this point, we're assuming the only Avot when it comes to Shabbat are the actual Yitziot, which are taken from the Rishut Hayachid into Rishut Harabim. Because the idea is of al yotzei is al yotzi, don't go out, don't do a hotza'ah. Later on, we're learning out mitzad asvara that there's also a concept of haknasa. The Mishnah in Shavuot is only interested in telling us the avot, not the toladot. So over here it adds that. So here, where it's the ikar Shabbat, it says both the avot and the toladot. In Shavuot, it excludes the haknasot. And only mentions the avot. The avot, as far as I know, there's only two cases of avot. And that is the hotza'ah of the ani and the hotza'ah of the ba'al habayit. That's the avot. So where's the four cases? So avot, says the Gemara, avot are what? The yitziot? Yitziot are only two. Train hagen. How do you get four? If you're going to follow the outline of our Mishnah here, then we have two which are four and two which are four, but each one of the two which are four included a kachnasa. So we're left with two which are four. One for the Ani, one for the balabayit. In each case, one a chiyav of hotza'ah and one a derabbanan of hotza'ah, right? Yeah. So maybe that's the meaning of Shavuos. Don't get confused with the Shtayim Shein Arba here, which are referring to the Ani and the Ba'al HaBayit, in both Yitziyot and Haknasot. It means there's Echachu Shnayim Bifnim and Echachu Shnayim Bachutz, essentially. Each one can do a Hotzah, which is a Chi of the Araisa, and each one can do a Hotzah, which is an Issur D'Rabbanan. Okay? That's a problem, though. Because v'chitem, you'll try to tell me that the meaning is two chiyuvim of hotzah, one for the Ani and one for the Ba'al HaBayit, and two peturim for hotzah, one for the Ani and one for the Ba'al HaBayit. Problem is that the Mishnah in Shavuot would have to remain consistently parallel, and the other cases in that Mishnah are chiyuvim, not derabbanan, but d'oraita. And we know all of that from Marot Negaim. That proves conclusively, even though there's a machloket in Shavuot about the other dinim, the Gemara there points out that since it says Marot Negaim in the Mishnah, clearly the Mishnah is assuming that everything is l'chiyuva, in which case the Shabbat also would have to be l'chiyuva. So Mahatam kulu l'chiyuva, Afachanami kulu l'chiyuva, and therefore the Shnayim Shein Arba cannot be two derises and two derabonans. There would have to be two derises, which equal four derises. So then you are including the Haknasot. Elamer of Papa. Okay. Exactly. That's exactly the point. How did you get eight in this case? By including four that are derabbanan. Okay, exactly. Ignore the four that are derabbanan. So now you have the Shnayim, Shein Arba, meaning you have the Haknasa and the Hotza'ah of the Ani, and the Haknasa and Hotza'ah of the Ashi. That's the Shnayim, Shein Arba. So you're including also the Haknasa. Very good. Elam Rav Papa, the correct way to understand it is, since over here we're dealing with the main dinim of Shabbat, in the second Shabbat, so we mention both the Chiyuv and the Ptur. Whereas over there, in the second Shavuot, we're only mentioning a list of things that have a surface similarity in having two essential ways that are mentioned in the Torah, which we expand into four. So we only talk about the chiyuv, and we don't talk about the derabbanans, which are potter. So, okay, so therefore, chiyuve tani, peturei lo tani. We don't mention the other four cases that we mentioned here in our mission. Wait, hold on a second now. You're confusing me. You said that we're going to, I'm assuming you're talking about Yitziyot HaShabbat. You said Shtayim. So in other words, when you say there's Chiyuvim, you mean Chiyuvim, mind you, under what category Chiyuvim? Under Yitziyot. How did you get four Chiyuvim under Yitziyot? Yitziyot Tarkin have you. You can only have two Chiyuvim. You can only have two Chiyuvim for Hotzaot. Either you're standing indoors and you do a Hotzaot, or you're standing outdoors and you do a Hotzaot. Where's the four? I understand. There's two. Yitziyot Tarkin have you. No. Of course it means we're no longer following our original logic. We no longer believe that we're only looking at the Hotza'ah, which is what we thought before. Forget about that original distinction. We're talking about both the Hotza'ah and the Akhnasah, and at this point some of the Rishonim say that we indeed have changed our mind about the Avot and Toladot that we assumed earlier. And it was wrong for us to say that Akhnasah is only a toladah. Actually, Haknasah is also an av. The Tosfos doesn't take that tact, but it is taken by some of the Rishonim, and therefore it appears in the Rambam. We don't view Haknasah as a different, as a toldah versus av. It's a different form because me'ein av. It's a different form of doing the exact same av. Because Mali Otsa'ah, Mali Akhnasah. Fine.
In the Ramah Teta, are they two separate ones?
What? No, of course not. They're just different forms of the same single malacha called Otsa'ah. You can know Otsa'ah in two ways. Again, it's a Machlokas Rishonim, which we'll see a lot of later on. But right now, the Gemara thought, wait a minute, if you limit it to Otsa'ah, and you're limiting it to Chiyuv, so you only have two, how do you have two that are four? So now we're saying, no, forget our previous distinction. We're not limiting it to Hotza'ah. Hotza'ah includes Akhnasah, and therefore you have four. But it doesn't say that. It says Yitziyot HaShabbat. How can Yitziyah, which means going out, mean coming in? Doesn't it mean what it says? HaYitziyot Katani. Om Ravashi, the Tana calls Akhnasah Hotza'ah. I know it sounds weird, but the word Hotza'ah actually only means to go from one rishus to another. I'll prove it to you, says Rav. I'll prove it to you. Don't look at me like I'm weird. Me, my. Mean it's none. Look, take a look at the list of the malachas in the later Mishnah. Hamotzim rishut rishut is the way that we define Hotza'ah in the Mishnah of the Lamed Tet Malachot. Hamotzim rishut rishut chayav. Now, is it not true that a motzim rishut rishut is chayav, even though he does Akhnasah? I mean, we see in our Mishnah that you're chayav. This is Beferush of Chayev. So, Milo Askina, does that not include as well the Kama Ayom Rishut Arabim, the Rishut Ayachid? Nonetheless, the Tana calls it Hotza'ah. Okay, now explain it to you. Don't look at me like I'm crazy. The time of my. The point is that an Akirat Chayfes Mimakomo, moving an item relative to the space in which it was, is called removal. That's not Hotza'ah. It's removal from a space. Does it have anything to do with going outside, inside? It has to do with taking it out of a space. That's all. I don't care how you define that space. That's called Hotza'ah. So when I take something out of where it was, I'm removing it from its spatial coordinates. That's called Hotza'ah. Ravina says, you don't have to go running around looking for Mishnayos. Read our Mishnah, and it becomes very clear that that's unavoidable. Because otherwise the Mishnah is simply outrageous. You start off by saying, Yitziyot HaShabbat, and what's the first thing you define in Yitziyot HaShabbat? Somebody who puts his hand into the house. Now, is that a way to talk about Yitziyot HaShabbat? I mean, even if you want to include Yitziyot HaShabbat, you don't begin the Mishnah by explaining immediately Haknasah, if you really mean Hotza'ah. So obviously the Tana is making a point, he's putting it in your face. When I say Yitziyot, I mean Yitziyot mi Rishut al Rishut. I don't mean taking it outdoors. So matnitin nami deka, our Mishnah proves it conclusively without needing any other proof. Diktoni yitziyota Shabbat. Yitziyota Shabbat. And then, kamefarish haknasa alialter. Immediately goes ahead and gives you an example of yitziyota Shabbat, which is a haknasa, which is absolutely unacceptable. Unless it's exactly the same thing. Shema Amina. That proves it without recourse to the other Mishnah. Rava Amar. Rava says the point over here is something entirely different. When it says Yitziyot HaShabbat, it does not mean the Yitziyot, the act of moving. The meaning of the word Yitziyot HaShabbat always means the various spaces of Shabbat from which it is possible to move between either Lechiev or Lepetur. That's what it means, Shtayim. In other words, Shtayim. What are those Shtayim? The Shtayim is Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaAvim. That's what the meaning is of Yitziyot HaShabbat. What types of Yitziyah can there be on Shabbat? Meaning, what spaces are there that you can remove from on Shabbat? That's the meaning of Yitziyot HaShabbat. So there's Rishut HaAvim. There's Rishut HaYachid, which lead you to two chiyuvim which are four bifnim, and two chiyuvim which are four bachutz. This is how Rashi understands. Now Tosfos, the Rivat in Tosfos says, that's very weird. Why does it say then, shtayim sheim arba bifnim, shtayim sheim arba bachutz? There's no need for the shtayim sheim arba bifnim. All it should say is that you have shtayim sheim arba bifnim, the arba bachutz. Why repeat the shtayim sheim? The shtayim sheim is a reference back to the Yitziyot HaShabbat. So, bishleim, if you're talking about different,
different,
not enough.
Should heard the beginning of the tape.
Yes, we have to play you. They have got this new idea for the website. I don't know if you heard about it. Great idea.
Spin-off.
No, not a spin-off. That's the TV series. The idea for the website is different things that keep people involved in the sugya. Mm-hmm. So one of it is you click on a thing, wake up Richie.
I like it.
Like it, I know you would. But you didn't hear the tough part.
Oh.
The tough part is that when they wake up Richie, he repeats the last three words. The only way we were able to work out doing that in your own voice is to have you say the entire daf. So it gives you a good chazor. Okay, so you understand, if the word Yitziyot is the antecedent of the Shtayim Shehein, isn't it? Yitziyot HaShabbat. I'm now claiming Yitziyot HaShabbat means Rishuyot HaShabbat. Rishut HaYachid, Rishut HaRabi. What's the meaning of Shtayim Shehein Arba Bifnim? They're Shtayim. Rishuyot HaShabbat are Shtayim, which are Arba, two of which are Bifnim and two of which are Machutz. What is that? Shtayim Shehein Arba Bifnim. Shtayim Shehein Arba Bifnim. Why am I repeating the Shtayim? They haven't changed. Bishleim, if the Yitziyot is dealing with the act of the Yitziyah, okay. Then you could say Shtayim Shehein Arba Bifnim, Shtayim Shehein Arba Bifnim, which is a different type of act, but it's not a different type of Rishus. It makes absolutely no difference to me what the names of the Rishus are, whether I'm standing inside or outside. So the Rivat doesn't like Rashi's approach, that it's a direct reference to the Rishus itself. So therefore, he says, look, we find that the nature of the word in the Torah, where it uses the word hotzah, it refers to boundaries, right? So in other words, it says, vayu totzotav hayama. Totzotav hayama, the targum is rishuyotav hayama. So in other words, what he's saying is that the meaning is, Rishuyot Shabbat have these various Totsa'ot. And that's what's Hotsa'ot HaShabbat. In other words, they have two Chiyuvim associated with them. Namely, the Chiyuv of Hotsa'ah and the Chiyuv of Achnasah. Those Chiyuvim of Yitziyah and Hotsa'ah are Shtayim Bifnim, and Shtei Bachutz. Rav is simply coming to clarify that it's not the word Yitziyah, it's rather the Tocha'otav of Rishuyot that is the meaning of, not every time I change a paper, I call that an act of Hotza'ah. But rather, changing of Rishuyot are viewed as Rishuyot or Tocha'ot. That which comes out of changing of Rishuyot we call Tocha'ot. But essentially...
Four total then, for him?
No, no, there's no difference. It's a semantic difference. How do I use the word Yitziyot? That's all, which is really what Rav is coming to explain. L'chora. Tomorrow, when the Gemara starts getting into the question, why don't we include 12 or 16? Tomorrow we'll talk about how to actually see the Mishnah in its final form, the way the Gemara distinguishes between the levels of Kiyev and Ptur. But so far we have a working explanation, which is Rashi's explanation, and a satisfactory explanation of the difference between our structure and the structure in Shavuos, which wasn't interested in the Rabbonans, but was including Hatzah and Hakmasah.